It's time, Fort Wayne. Your sports, your station. It's the Sports Rush with Brett Rump. Covering all the topics that hit a nerve here in the Summit City.
Clark, 11-yard touchdown!
Only on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Now, here's your host, Brett Rump.
The greatest, most interesting, most important person of all time.
You are incredible!
Awesome. Older than I'm one.
Yeah, well, you're half right.
This is amateur hour.
This is going to be huge.
I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
Just when I think you said the stupidest thing ever, you keep talking.
I think that's the worst thing I've ever heard.
That boy ain't right.
The simplest way to put it, I have problems.
Welcome to the alleged show.
The Purdue Boilermakers are heading to a Final Four. Lot to talk about on this Monday edition of the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. I am Brett Rump, along with Adam Lundy, and we've got you connected on the Parkview Sports Medicine text line at 46862. Give us your thoughts. If you're Boilermakers fans, are you satisfied? Is the season complete, or is there still work to do? Because I look at it and I think, you know, it's great. You can celebrate the fact you're going to the Final Four, but there's still business to be done because the Purdue Boilermakers should not think that making it to the Final Four is the end of the work, the end of the road, the end of the job, because this is a team that's been ranked in the top three virtually the entire season. And the three teams that we have picked head and shoulders above everyone else almost all year long, UConn, Houston, and Purdue, I think proved that they were the best three teams. Now, unfortunately, Houston gets dinged up with injuries, and I think that cost them a game against Duke. I think Houston, if they were healthy, might have been also in the Final Four, and we could have had the three best teams all season along with, I guess, a fourth team. But the bottom line is the Purdue Boilermakers have made it. They have, and I think getting to the Final Four, this kind of sheds all the demons, all of the, you know, talk about Matt Painter can't win in March. You can kind of put that away because they did make the Final Four. But as far as this year's team and this year's potential, I don't think they've reached it yet. They've won four out of the six they need to win to claim a championship. I think they should be disappointed if they don't make it at least to the championship against UConn. Because I believe those are the two best teams in the country. And if Purdue fails to make it, those two teams in the championship game, then I think Purdue has fallen maybe a step short of what their potential is this year. But the one thing is they didn't fall short where they got beat by somebody they had no business losing to. In fact, they've been pretty dominant and against Tennessee. You know, here's the thing about the game yesterday. Purdue was everything we feared that we would see from Purdue in a March Madness game, and they still won. They still won. I mean, Purdue could not hit a shot. They hit 20% of their threes, a team that on the season was tops in the country at over 40% from behind the arc. And we said all year, they better have it in March because that's what cost them the last couple of years is the failure to be able to hit the outside shot. And yesterday, they didn't hit the outside shot. Fletcher Loyer didn't have a good day. Lance Jones, what was that first one he launched? My goodness. I don't know if that was a little extra adrenaline or what, but he launched it about 5 feet over the basket. And then he comes back, and what does he do? He's got the confidence to take the biggest shot of the game, and I think it was the biggest shot of the game. I mean, Zach Edey had plenty of big buckets, but the fact that Zach Edey kept scoring and Tennessee would come back and counter, and the game stayed within a 2 or 3 point margin, the fact that Lance Jones, when the team was up three, got a chance to make it six and buried a three-pointer from right in front of his bench, unbelievable shot by Lance Jones. And so the Boilermakers move on and they dispose of Tennessee. It was the only 1-versus-2 matchup we had in our Elite Eight. So, you know, in some ways, Purdue has faced probably one of the most challenging roads. Gonzaga, I don't think, was any gimme, and Purdue pretty much controlled that game throughout. And then getting the number two seed, the Tennessee Volunteers, in the regional championship game. And the Boilermakers hold on for a 72-66 win. Very similar score to what they had the first time these two teams played, where it was, what, 71-67?
Yep.
And so it was a four-point game the first time, a six-point game this time. And for Purdue, some of the similarities, they didn't shoot real well that game either from behind the arc. But they found a way to win. Now, the one thing that was not similar is that Zach Edey absolutely was on a mission yesterday, and he was not going to allow Purdue to lose that game. 40 points. He kept getting to the free throw line, ended up shooting 22 free throws. Zach Edey was just unbelievable. And if he didn't solidify the fact that he's the best player in the college game, at least this year, he should have moved up the ranks among some of the best in college basketball all time.
Absolutely all time. And we talked to Rob Blackman after the first weekend of Purdue, and we said that Zach Edey looks like a man possessed just from his demeanor and the way he's looked going into some of these games and throughout this tournament. And he continued to prove that this past weekend with these wins over Gonzaga and Tennessee.
Yeah, in the press conferences, he didn't seem to want to answer questions because it seemed like his focus was on something completely different. So he would give a very short, limited answer to most of the questions because that, you know, the reporter's question wasn't necessarily the direction that Zach Edey was focused. He was focused on next game, mentality, getting prepared. And it's always fascinating, too, how Zach Edey uses certain situations and circumstances to motivate him. And we learned what the motivation was yesterday after the game when he talked about being overlooked and so many coaches looked past him and didn't give him a second look or didn't give him a shot, didn't even, you know, take notice of him. And he said that Rick Barnes at Tennessee had been to numerous practices and never even gave him a look. And he said, coaches that have passed me up, you can't ignore me anymore. And so that was his motivation for yesterday. And you could see that drive, that determination. And what's funny is I didn't think it was his best game. I mean, Tennessee chose to isolate and play him one-on-one on numerous possessions. But he had trouble, I thought, early in the game getting to that left shoulder with that right-handed jump hook. And sometimes when he did, he didn't get the ball up to the basket. He got caught in a trap. He seemed to be a little uncertain where the double teams were coming from, whether they were really coming or if they were just faking that they were coming. It took him a while before he really settled into the game. But once he did in the second half, Purdue was going to feed him. And they fed him and fed him and fed him. And the only answer Tennessee had was to foul him. And I even mentioned this. I said every time that Zach Edey tries to go to that patented semi-jump hook where he turns over the left shoulder and drops it in with the right hand, I said, every time he goes to that move, Tennessee is all over it. I said, but when he fakes that move and either goes to a step through or, goes some type of other way to the basket, he was getting layups. He did it a couple of times with really good moves. But he kind of figured the game out as it went along, and he became more effective in that second half. And he just totally dominated this game down the stretch. And Dalton Knecht had his moment in the first half, but the second half belonged to Zach Edey.
I think it's a little bit of that conditioning coming into play, honestly. I mean, we've seen Edey step up his minutes season by season, and now he plays almost the entire game.
Less than 1 minute on the bench yesterday.
And one of the bonuses to playing that much and being able to play that much in a game is you can kind of, you know, get into your groove and develop a feel of how the opponent is guarding you and some of the looks they're sending at you, and you can respond to those.
And he had numerous dance partners yesterday, meaning that Tennessee was sending out one guy, then another guy, and he kept following them out. So just an unbelievable day for Zach Edey. But again, Purdue showed what everybody feared that was a Boilermakers fan, is that, boy, if we get into March and all of a sudden, for some reason, we can't hit the three-point shot, and they pack the paint against Edey. Now, what was interesting is Tennessee wasn't exactly packing the paint they were showing different looks. Whereas a team like Fairleigh Dickinson, they would put three guys on all sides of Zach Edey. They'd front him, they'd back him, and they'd throw an extra guy down low in case he put it on the deck. Tennessee wasn't using that defense, but Purdue was getting some really good looks. I mean, Mason Gillis had two or three wide open threes and missed them all. Fletcher Lawyer had a kick out where he stepped into a three. And you know, yes, top 3-point shooters end up shooting around 40% or just a little bit over on the season. But those types of threes, those types of shooters should be hitting about 70, 75%. And he clanked it off the back rim. In fact, I think on one possession, Purdue had like three threes and missed all three of them. And Tennessee got the ball back. But all of the greatest fears of what if for Purdue, they were happening yesterday, and Purdue was still good enough because of a dominant Zach Edey to win the game.
Yeah, if I had told you, if you didn't know the final score, that Purdue had shot 3 of 15 from the three-point line and that Tennessee had 20 points from turnovers and that Purdue left 12 points at the free throw line, do you think that you would have thought that they had won the game?
Here's the crazy thing. The Tennessee got 20 points off turnovers, and Purdue turned it over 10 times.
Every time they scored.
I mean, now they hit a couple of threes.
Right, Dalton Connect, right.
Dalton Connect hit a couple of threes out of that. But the point is, that's where Tennessee lives, is trying to turn you over and convert in transition. They want to play that type of pace. And Rick Barnes noted it at halftime, that he expected Purdue to play at their pace, and Purdue was trying to make it a half-court game. And so a little bit of the cat and mouse advantage to Painter, because that was a surprise to Rick Barnes, clearly, when he said at halftime, the game isn't going at the pace we expected it to. We thought Purdue would go up and down the court with us, and obviously they want to make it more of a half-court game and slow it down. And so that was an advantage, Boilermakers. But, yeah, you take Purdue turned it over 10 times. Tennessee only turned it over 7 times. Mm-hmm. Tennessee hit, what, 10 or 11 threes?
11.
11 threes. They were 11 of 28 from three. Purdue hit only 3 threes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you look at the statistics, yeah, you could be confused. Now, Purdue won the battle on the glass.
Yeah.
Zach Edey was 13 of 21 and then 14 of 22 at the free throw line. Purdue really had a chance to win this game going away. They didn't because of free throws and 3-point shots. You know, they missed too many free throws. And Braden Smith wasn't Braden Smith. I mean, he was not getting opportunities, and he was being guarded, I think, by the defensive player of the year in the Southeast Conference, which does make things a little more challenging. But the fact that Purdue found a way to win, when all of the things that everybody was afraid of going wrong kind of went wrong, it is a real credit to this group. And it's why you should have a lot of confidence going into this weekend that Purdue is not going to get beat by a upstart, Cinderella, whatever you want to call them, North Carolina State, especially when they ride DJ Burns.
Hey, now.
He's going to go against Zach Edey.
There
and
you go.
I mean, DJ Burns, you can have your way with guys at Oakland, but it's going to get a little tougher when you go against Zach Edey. And that's what North Carolina State's going to face in the Final Four game, which Purdue will tip off the Final Four. They'll be in the first game, 6:09, coming up this Saturday.
Looking forward to it. You mentioned Zach Edey, talking about his motivation and a little bit about Tennessee. I've been seeing this response online, and we've also got it on the text line. They said, Zach Edey talks like he came from nothing and has had all these hurdles in life to overcome. He's 7'4", went to IMG Academy, and was offered by a high-level D1 Big Ten program. Give me a break. I'm an IU fan, by the way, if that explains my opinion, but still.
Again, it is Zach Edey's way of coming up with the motivation to kind of bury the hatchet. I mean, the reality is, it may not be completely true. I mean, there might be other circumstances. Rick Barnes may have not needed a center. He may have committed the two centers. We don't know. But the point is that this is what Zach Edey has pulled to provide that motivation for him to want to perform against that team. Hey, so far it's working. And Matt Painter has referred to it before about, you know, maybe a comment that was made in the media, a press conference comment, something that was said on a coach's show. Zach Edey takes it all in. He decides what's going to irritate him and make him a little more hungry. And that's what has driven him. And, of course, the loss last year in the tournament, that's been a driving factor. Zach Edey came back with one goal in mind. He had an opportunity to leave last year. The reason Zach Edey is playing this season is he wants that title, and he wants to make full amends for what happened against Fairleigh Dickinson. And for Zach Edey, I don't think making it to the Final Four was the balance. I mean, making it to the Final Four would be like winning the first weekend of the tournament a year ago. It's not quite a complete job. And so I see Zach Edey as being extremely motivated, but a lot of that motivation comes from things that he kind of picks and chooses and takes out of context. Maybe it was out of context. And yeah, maybe if you look at the whole story, you think, hey, he still had opportunities. But he had very few Division I opportunities that gave him the opportunity that he did get at Purdue. And Tennessee was not one of them, even though Rick Barnes did attend numerous practices, which is not uncommon when you're at a place like IMG Academy. You've got multiple players that are being scouted, recruited.
Yeah.
but the fact was they always came. They watched the other players. They talked to them and completely left him out of the picture. And he remembers.
There you go.
And it's probably part of why he's become what he's become.
Absolutely.
Because it's been a lot of work. I mean, that's the one thing, whether you're an Indiana fan, whether you're a Purdue fan, just a college basketball fan, you do have to respect about Zach Edey. There's a lot of what he does that is self-made. Yes, you can't coach 7-4. I mean, you know, he starts with that body. Okay. And the thing is that gives him a clear advantage. But there's been guys that are 7-footers that have played in college basketball that have been no impact whatever on the game. And so for Zach Edey, he made it his mission to be the best possible basketball player he could be. And in some ways, what has driven him along that path has been coaches that bypassed on him. And so it's been a source of motivation for Zach Edey. Braden Smith had just 9 points. Lawyer was 1-for-5 from three, finished with 14 points. But much like the first game against Tennessee, where he scored 27 points, he got some points, but he didn't get the hot three-point shooting, just 1-for-5 in the game yesterday. And Lance Jones was just 1-for-4 from behind the arc. But we all know the one he made.
Yeah.
One of the biggest shots or the biggest shot of the game. So we'll talk more Purdue. We'd love to get your comments. 46862, the Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. But right now we want to kind of scan the globe and take a look at what's happening in the world of sports and get an update from Adam Lundy.
All right. Thanks, Brett. Well, Hinkle Fieldhouse has sold out tickets for both of the semifinal games tomorrow and the championship game on Thursday, with most of the tickets going to Indiana State fans. That's according to Indiana Sports Corporation. The Sycamores play Utah and Georgia play Seton Hall tomorrow. Hinkle seats about 9,100 people. The last time the NIT semifinals and championship game averaged more than 9,000 fans was in 2018, when the games were played at Madison Square Garden.
Here's a thought. Memorial Coliseum holds about 11,000 people. If you can't get a foot in the door with the NCAA tournament, maybe you work with the NCAA to get the NIT finals.
I like it. Cam Sutton, the veteran cornerback wanted for weeks by police in Florida for his alleged involvement in a domestic violence case, turned himself in on Sunday, the Hillsborough County Sheriff's Office said. Police had been unable to locate Sutton since March 7th, when an arrest warrant was issued for him. Sutton's attorney contacted the Hillsborough Sheriff's Office last Monday to say he would turn himself in, only to do so 6 days later. And an MLB update here for you, Brett. After 7 innings, the White Sox are down 6-0 to the Braves. The Cubs have a 3-0 lead over the Rockies, and it's 0-0 between the Pirates and Nationals after 2. The Reds take on the Phillies in Philadelphia tonight at 6:40. The Tigers take on the Mets in Queens with first pitch at 7:10. And the Guardians take on the Mariners out in Seattle at 9:40. And Shota Imanaga in his MLB debut for Chicago today Six innings with two hits, no runs, no walks, nine strikeouts on 92 pitches.
Became the first Chicago Cubs pitcher in history to make his first major league start at a Chicago Cubs home opener. And didn't do too badly.
Not bad at all.
There you go. Today's top headlines with Adam Lundy. Still coming up on the show, we've got Dylan Sin. He will join us. He was at the Boilermakers game up in Detroit yesterday. Also, Don Fisher, for the final time this season, we'll talk to the legendary Hall of Fame voice of the Indiana Hoosiers. That comes up at its regular time around 5:20. And still coming up on the other side, a former NFL and Colts cornerback at 35 years old found dead in his home. We will give you some details when we return from the break. Sad news to report coming from the NFL and the Indianapolis Colts as former Colts cornerback Vontae Davis has been found dead by Florida police in his home in Southwest Ranches, Florida. Just 35 years old, police immediately say that there's no foul play suspected. No details have come out regarding his death, but obviously a shock that Vontae Davis, who just within the last, 8 to 10 years or so, was wearing a Colts uniform as a shutdown corner, he has been found dead, 35 years old, at Southwest Beaches, Southwest Ranches, Florida, which I believe is a suburb of Fort Lauderdale in the Plantation, Florida area. Just sad news. And they'll continue an investigation into his death. But again, no details have been released. 46862 is Parkview Sports Medicine text line. 46862, give us your thoughts on this Sports Monday as we are now a week away from the national championship game and we are 5 days away from the Final Four, which will involve the Purdue Boilermakers picking up the win over Tennessee, the number two seed in the Midwest region. And, Purdue certainly earned their way beating Gonzaga and Tennessee, two teams that they had beaten earlier in the year. And sometimes you think that gives the advantage to the team that lost because they know exactly what they need to do and change to be that much better. Purdue gets the season sweep against both Tennessee and Gonzaga. And Purdue heads to Arizona. By the way, yesterday, as soon as the game was over, I checked for tickets. Not tickets to the game, tickets to fly out.
Uh-huh.
Right? Because someone was joking about the Sports Rush doing the show live in Phoenix.
I think we should.
And I thought, absolutely. We definitely should be out there in Phoenix. We better look up and see what it's going to cost and get our expenses approved before we buy the tickets. So I went online, checked Allegiant, and it was like the app crashed. when I put it in, it said select your outgoing flight and nothing showed up on the screen. It was like blank and it never showed up. I tried it. I shut it down. I redid it two or three times. And after about a half hour, then what happened was I went to the calendar and that flight no longer existed. So in other words, it had sold out. So I do know. No Sports Rush in Phoenix. Although there are flights, you don't have to take Allegiant. You could take another airline. And so I looked up those. But I do think we're going to have problems, Adam, getting a $1,100 flight approved by the Budgetary Commission here at Federated Media.
Yeah, that's kind of a pretty penny.
And it's probably past the point where I want to take the risk of it's better to beg forgiveness than ask permission. So at this point, I just think we'll be right here at home watching it on TV like everyone else.
Gotta make do.
It'd have been fun.
But I know we do have a live appearance scheduled for next week.
We do?
We do.
Do I know about it?
I believe we'll be at opening day.
Oh, I was thinking basketball. I'm sorry. Yeah, you're throwing a different sport at me now.
That's true. I just, since we're doing it live on location, I figured I would mention that it's coming up.
I believe so. I think that has been arranged. It's still so far in the distance that I have not really paid a whole lot of attention. But
by so far, do you mean 8 days?
Yeah, 8 days. That's a long way away from me. I'm barely know what I'm going to be doing tomorrow. Yeah, we're going to be at Parkview Field as Den Caps will open up their season. And, of course, they open up their home season next Tuesday.
Right.
They open up their season this Friday.
How about that?
And the team already has arrived in Fort Wayne and is getting in some practice for a couple of days before they head off to Great Lakes. Always great. I always appreciate the traveling broadcasters of the Fort Wayne Tin Caps who look at the schedule and then see the very first trip at the beginning of April is going to be some of the northernmost cities in the Midwest League.
Ah, the western side of Michigan, close to the lake there.
Yeah, it's they're going up to Great Lakes, which is actually Midland.
Oh.
You know, it's that part that's, when you look at your hand, it's the part that's by the index finger.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, you say Great Lakes, you think they'd be near Great Lake.
Well, it is a Great Lake. There's Great Lakes on both sides of Michigan.
That's
this
true.
Is more on the eastern side.
Not okay.
Now, on the west side,
it's
you've
the
got
west.
The Whitecaps.
Yeah,
you've got
that
west,
makes sense.
West Michigan Whitecaps, which makes sense that West Michigan is not on the east side of Michigan.
Little geography.
Yeah, little geography. But Great Lakes, actually, in Midland, Michigan.
I'm sure they still get some.
The what is that, Soaring Eagle? What the casino.
Oh.
I should know my casino names.
Midland.
There's a casino up there that's
Soaring
only.
Soaring Eagle.
Soaring Eagle. It's like 15 minutes away. 20 minutes away. It's a quick shot from Midland over to the casino. Not that I would know.
No, you wouldn't know.
No, but just.
But you know.
Just passing this along. Because I noticed the schedule does have a Saturday afternoon game and a Sunday afternoon game, which means Saturday night is free. And I do believe the casino will be open on Saturday night for any broadcaster that might be making the trip.
Wink, wink.
Yeah.
Although I don't know if our broadcaster might be 21.
Oh, yeah. They're all 20.
They're all 21?
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, I know as I get older, they all look like kids, but no, they're 21.
Everything above the law here. Oh, man, they're putting the tarp on the field in Chicago in the top of the eighth inning.
And the Cubs up 3-0?
This is actually the White Sox game.
Oh, the White Sox.
It's a 6-0 lead for the Braves.
Yeah, they should just call that game.
But I imagine that probably means that the Cubs will be affected, too.
Yeah, you're probably, what, six miles or so from the ballparks? I don't know what the exact distance would be, but
we'll see.
Difference from the south side to the north side.
We'll keep you updated on your Cubbies.
Well, yeah, 46862 is Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. So Friday, we started the weekend. It's hard to believe because so many things have happened.
It's been a busy weekend.
Over this weekend.
Oh, yeah.
That I almost forget, you know what? We started our weekend on Friday night at the Gates Center where the Mastodons women were taking on St. Louis.
Yeah.
In the women's NIT. Oh, such a frustrating loss. Disappointing.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, the program's come so far, and it's still a great accomplishment to get to the Super 16 of the WNIT, but they had a chance to be in the Great Eight. They had a chance to win that game and quite honestly should have won the game. I thought... Overall, I thought they were better than St. Louis, but you cannot, in the fourth quarter, miss two wide open layups, one on a transition breakaway and another one on a drive where nobody guarded you. You just cannot miss wide open layups, and they missed two of them, and they lost by 4 points. Well, even I can do that math, Adam. You
Me
lose
too.
By four, and you got two wide open missed layups. And then they turned the ball over 19 times, which also doesn't help.
Yep, and it'll sting. This is a tough loss, but like you said, great season for the women Mastodons.
Yeah, but the fact, it kind of shows you how far the program's come.
Yep.
And the fact that you can look at a game like this and you can analyze that they should have won it. Because a couple of years ago, you'd have just appreciated the fact they got the invite.
Absolutely.
You know, that they were even on the invite list. So,
and they wouldn't have been.
They would not have been with one win. Maria Marcassano's done a great job in 3 years turning the program around. They finished with 23 wins this season. And I think there's brighter days ahead. I mean, I think this team's going to be even better next year. Yeah, they lose a couple of key players, but they got a couple of good freshmen coming in. They've got... a good core coming back. Amelia Bromenschenkel's going to come back, their best player. So I think there's a very bright future for the women, but unfortunately, they just didn't get it done. Missing wide open layups, 19 turnovers. That will doom you in a high stakes, high leverage game in the postseason. And St. Louis came into the Gates Center and beat the Mastodons by 4. All right, we'll take a break because Dylan Sin is standing by. He's going to join us. Of course, Dylan was covering the Boilermakers all weekend long in Detroit. We'll get his take on the Boilermakers' big win in the regional championship against Tennessee. That comes up next here on the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Yeah, tough loss to end the season for the Macedons women's basketball team. We were talking about it before the break, and 19 turnovers. St. Louis had 16 steals. And then St. Louis out-rebounded the Macedons 40-31, including 19 offensive rebounds. And part of the problem is when they get 19 offensive rebounds, you get 22 defensive rebounds. It's basically 50-50 off the rim every time St. Louis took a shot. And that cost them two. What was second chance points? Second chance points were advantage St. Louis 21-6. So they won that battle by 15 as well. 4-point loss for the Macedons, ending their season with a 23-13 record. They'll
be
back.
I believe that's still a record for the program, right? And wins.
Yeah, it's a program record for wins. It's obviously the first postseason victories they've ever gotten in their history. So they took great strides, and certainly. It kind of validates what we've been saying, that this program is growing at a rapid pace under Maria Marcassano. Here's the thing about it, though.
Yeah.
You look at this lineup, and 80% of the lineup, or 70%, is primarily players that she inherited. And players that were recruited by the former regime. Remember this past season, she held on to 3 scholarships.
Yeah.
And pack them on with what she has available this year. So I think she can bring in like 5 new players. I think they're probably going to bring in 2 or 3 players off the portal, a couple of good freshmen that will be coming in. So, a lot of promise in the future for Macedons women's basketball. At the Final Four, we talked about all year, UConn and Purdue seem to be the 2 dominant teams along with Houston. Houston, of course, had the injuries in the postseason. And I think it might have cost them a game against Duke. But Purdue and UConn on a collision course to hook up in a national championship game. And that is what I think is going to happen, or should happen. Because
right.
I think it'll be a heck of a national title game if you get UConn versus Purdue. And Klingon against Edie, good matchup on the inside. Although Edie will be out there for 38 minutes. Klingon might end up being out there for 22, 23, 24, maybe.
Right. Not only does it depend on his conditioning, it also depends if Edie can get him into some foul trouble as well.
Right. And that could be a concern for both sides because, obviously, Purdue doesn't want Edie into foul trouble either. But Connecticut, man, what a run they went on against Illinois. Like nothing we've ever seen at this point in the tournament. A 30-0 streak for UConn against the fightless Illini.
Right. I don't even know what happened with that. That's almost inexplainable how a team like Illinois could not score for that long of a period and get that much of a deficit. I mean, we've seen them be dynamic scoring with, some of their players. Terrence Shannon Jr. is on that team.
Yeah, I mean, they've got some players that can score.
And I know that UConn has an incredible defense, but, I mean, come on, 30-0.
Illinois missed some shots, careless with the basketball. UConn just took advantage of it. I mean, UConn scored almost every possession.
Right.
And yesterday, when Purdue went on the 13-point run, that was eventually ended. I think it was actually a Dalton Connect 3 that may have ended it.
Or
at least a bucket by Dalton Connect. But it was a 13-point run in that first half. I said, well, Purdue fell short in their quest to get to 30-0. I think that it's going to be the ultimate championship game if somehow the path ends up being UConn and Purdue come Monday night, because all year long we have felt like those are 2 of the 3 best teams, arguably the 2 best, And if they end up being the two that end up making it, I think that's going to set up the stage for a terrific championship game Monday night, 1 week away on April 8th. All right, so we've got Dylan Sen joining us. He is just a bit delayed, but we've got him on the line now. So let's go ahead and talk about this Purdue team and the Purdue game against Tennessee as Dylan Sen from the Journal-Gazette joins us on the guest line. And Dylan, the monkey clearly off the back after a 44-year drought and after a couple of years of major disappointments, the Boilermakers are going to the Final Four.
Absolutely, and you could tell they had been kind of holding in some emotion through the early rounds of the tournament. They kept saying they hadn't accomplished anything yet, and there was even a little bit of that after yesterday's game. They said that there's still more work to do, so you could tell there was a little bit of a kind of a cathartic moment for a lot of these players and former players and the fans. You know, this had been a long time coming. They've had so much success, and now to finally reach the pinnacle of the sport, it was pretty special.
If you ranked, I guess, top programs and started at number one and worked your way down, would Purdue have been the first one you'd have come to that had gone this long from appearing in a Final Four? Is there anybody else in a similar position? I was trying to think through this on the fly. I don't know of anyone, but can you think of anyone?
Yeah, I can't think of anyone, really. And that's what's remarkable is that they've had so many chances to do it, so many good teams over the years that could have easily made this kind of run and just didn't for one reason or another. And I think that that's why it was so frustrating for a lot of Purdue fans, was that they were doing all of the things that a program should do to build and maintain success, but to not have it rewarded on the biggest stage, I think, was really, really tough for obvious reasons. And then now to finally get it done in this season was really, really special again, like I said.
Dylan Sen joining us here on the guest line, and of course, it was an unbelievable performance by Zach Edey. What were the keys that you saw? Was it a Tennessee defense? Was it just a motivated Zach Edey? What did he do in piling up 40 points?
Yeah, I think it was partially a motivated Zach Edey. This obviously meant a lot to him, and he was very, very motivated. He was not going to let Tennessee stand in his way. I think Tennessee let him go single coverage on a lot of possessions. Not all of them. They varied it a little bit. But they let him go one-on-one a lot and tried to slow down Purdue on the perimeter. And they did that to a certain extent. I mean, Purdue went 3-for-15 from beyond the arc. That's not where they usually want to be. And so Zach Edey at some point realized, I'm going to have to carry us here. And he stepped up and did it. And Matt Painter said it after the game. He was asked about Edey having 40. And he said, well, made some free throws, he could have had 50. And that's kind of the esteem that they hold Zach Edey in, is that they believe that he could have games like that on a regular basis.
Dylan, let's talk a little bit about what this means for the Purdue Boilermakers and just the overall perception of the Boilermakers in the national ranks, because I think this was a program that was labeled as a dominant program that had capabilities of winning championships during the regular season, but don't count on them to do anything in March. And maybe that was unfair, but that was the perception. Does this totally remove that label for Matt Painter and this Purdue Boilermakers program?
I think it does to a certain extent. I think that, because if you think about the NCAA tournament, it's just the way to success in college basketball is just have good teams over and over and over again, and eventually you're going to break through because the tournament is just kind of random. And yeah, a good team usually wins. You have to be good to win six games in a row, but it's not always the best team that's going to win in any given game. So Purdue just had to keep at it, and I think now that they've broken through, you kind of can't say, well, Matt Painter can't win on the big stage, or the way he builds his teams can't win on the big stage, that kind of thing. So I think that kind of removes some of those labels because he's done it now. Now he can say, I've been to a Final Four. He can walk into a recruit's home, because this is all what we're talking about here is marketing for recruiting, right? He can walk into a recruit's home and say, I am a Final Four coach. I can get you to the biggest stage and then get you to the NBA if you stay. stick with me, and because he's done that. He's done both of those things now. So that's a huge boon for him going forward.
How close to the top of the list of Purdue all-time greats is Zach Edey right now, and is there anything he can do to secure a top spot on that list?
I mean, so here's the thing, is I am coming at this as a guy who has been covering the team for the last 7 years, and I obviously know a lot of the history, but I know there are going to be people out there who disagree with me on this. I think he's the greatest Boilermaker right now. I think you can make a case for Rick Mount, who led his team to the national title game and would have had much higher scoring numbers had he played a couple more years. But Zach Edey is just so dominant in scoring and rebounding, and he's made himself into a very capable defender. And now he's led this team to the Final Four with one of the all-time performances, individual single-game performances in program history. It's hard to top that resume. It really is. And I guess if he really wants to cement it, I think he could win the next two games and win a title. And I think if he does that, there would just be no question about it. But I do think that I would put him number one right now. He just has everything you want in a resume for a great player.
Hey, Dylan, I don't want to put you on the spot, but I'm going to bring it up because I know our listeners will be texting us. With your phone, it sounds great today, and then all of a sudden it sounds like you've got your thumb over the microphone, and it goes away for about 3 seconds, then it pops back on. I don't know if it's your phone or if it's how you're holding it. I just wanted to pass it along to let people know that we're aware of it and we're trying to help as much as possible.
You can tell people I do appreciate it, and we are working on a fix. So stay tuned for that.
We always get a comment or two, and we love talking to you because you're always insightful and have plenty to say, but it's always kind of one of those things where we have to answer the text after the appearance. All right, let's do talk, though, about what comes ahead next. North Carolina State, they're the Cinderella of this tournament. DJ Burns, a big man, is kind of their star, but they've got guard play as well. When you look at this matchup, though, I just think it's so weighted to the Boilermakers making it to Monday.
Yeah, so do I, right? I do think that just by all likelihood, they should win that game. They are the better team. It's not that North Carolina State cannot play, because they can. They're a good team. They've proven it. They obviously believe in themselves. You don't win essentially 9 elimination games in a row without tremendous belief in yourself and what you're doing, and they're playing with a ton of confidence right now. But I do think that Purdue is just a better team almost across the board. Edey will obviously be motivated with the matchup against DJ Burns, a guy who's match him in heft, if not in height. And I do think that Purdue has the advantage on the perimeter with Braden Smith, who's playing a kind of under the radar terrific tournament here because Zach Edey's been so great. Braden Smith has, I think, 38 assists and 7 turnovers for a sophomore in March. That's really, really good. And so I do think that the combination of those two, as it's been all season, should put Purdue over the top unless they just can't hold on to the ball at all.
You know what's amazing, and I'm kind of going back a little bit on this, but what's amazing about this Purdue win against Tennessee is, and I mentioned this earlier on the show, that everything Purdue fans were afraid of, the 3-point shot goes away, and the turnovers, I mean, whatever you want to look at, I mean, Tennessee had 20 points off turnovers. All the things Purdue feared that would be their demise, they actually had in this game, and they still found a way to win because Zach Edey was just that dominant.
Yeah, and Matt Painter said it after the game against Gonzaga, where they had to that point in the tournament 3 straight games where they shot the ball extremely well. And Painter said, like, it's great that we're playing well, but are you going to be able to win a game in March when you don't shoot it well? And you don't take care of the ball. And they went out and did it. And they didn't actually turn the ball over too much. Tennessee got 20 points off of turnovers, but it was because basically every single one of Purdue's 10 turnovers turned into like an easy basket to the volunteers. Like it was kind of insane. They had so many scramble mode threes that kind of got them back in the game. But Purdue owned the glass, just completely dominated in that department. Zach Edey was great. Braden Smith ran the offense. Fletcher Lawyer got to the rim when they were running him off the line. He got to the rim, and so did Lance Jones. And Purdue found a way, and that's something that we haven't seen from this team over the years. And it's another way that this team is different from the versions that came before it.
How close was that environment to Mackey Arena?
It was pretty close. I'd say about 80 to 85% Purdue fans, and they were loud, and they were into it. And none of them left. Like, you could, like, when they were doing the trophy presentation after the game, the stands were still 75% full. So almost everyone had stayed. It was really a special environment, and obviously Purdue benefited tremendously from having that kind of that environment behind them. It was a quasi-home game for them.
Well, Dylan, great coverage this weekend from Detroit. Appreciate the time, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Absolutely, Brett. Thanks for having me on.
Yep, that is Dylan Sin joining us from the Journal-Gazette. Yeah, we know sometimes the phone, but you know what? I think it got better.
It's getting better, and he's just such a good guest that we can deal with a little bit of...
Love having him on the show because of the content that he brings.
Absolutely.
And so we'll work with him as much as anybody to try to make sure we get the best connection possible. And so I feel you as a listener that sometimes it gets a little frustrating if it cuts in and out a little bit. But just try to pay attention. Just try to, you know, not worry about it. Listen to what he has to say because he's always got great coverage of the Boilermakers. And, of course, he does a great job covering the Hoosiers, other college sports. And we see him covering Mastodons, high school sports. The kid just does it all.
Tin Caps.
Tin Caps. Yeah, he's got the Tin Caps coming up starting next week. We'll take a break. We're going to come back another hour on the way, including the Hall of Fame voice of the Indiana Hoosiers, Don Fisher. It's our 15 Minutes with Fish, the final edition for 2023-2024. That comes up at 5:20. This is a Monday edition of the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.